This is a recording of a workshop given by Douglas Harding on the 12th of September 1993 in the Phoenix Bookstore in Anaheim, Orange County, California. Douglas was 84 years old. This is part one.
Well, it sure is a family group, and Catherine and I have been in the States for 5 weeks, and this is certainly not the biggest meeting we've been to, but I think it's something to be said for this, isn't there? Something to be said for the intimacy of a group like this, and it's an opportunity to meet several new friends around the room, and special welcome to those four or five new friends. Well, what are we on about? What's it all about? And I was thinking on the way here that we believe, don't we, we have a kind of fond illusion in the modern world that we are kind of hard-headed and not superstitious. On the whole, of course, there are superstitious regions of our culture, but on the whole, we're pretty hard-nosed, realistic. We're not superstitious in the way medieval man was superstitious, believing in a flat earth and you just plumped over the edge and sky full of angels and all sorts of funny things, like somewhere was the door of hell, which is right in the middle of the earth, and that kind of thing. And we rather pride ourselves nowadays, don't we, on being realistic and telling it like it is and not being superstitious anymore. As a culture which has replaced in prestige, I think, science, it replaced religion by science. And science is the basis of science is to doubt everything you can doubt and test everything you can test and build on what you can verify and share. And this has meant the death of many, many superstitions, hasn't it? And I think good riddance. I think science is a broom which sweeps away what is absurd, ridiculous, and nonsense in religion, philosophy, psychology, and so forth. But I was thinking on the way here that in fact, I think in a way, we are even more superstitious than in medieval times and earlier times. In some ways, we are not. In other ways, I think in very, very fundamental ways, I think we live lives of profound obscurantism, if that's the word I want, obscurantism, not telling it like it is. But going as far as multiple hallucination, nonsense, unsupported prejudice, belief, and so on. And that in the most fundamental regions of our life, you know, when it comes to oneself here, as first person, singular, present tense, as who we really, really are, what we're looking out of, who we are, identity. As regards that, I think we are more superstitious than ever, and I'm judging by my own case of dreadful, for years, I mean, dreadful blindness to who I am and what I am. And I was ruled for those years by current superstitions. I was told what I was here, and I fell for it. And this afternoon, I'd like just to go into this matter with you to see whether you agree with me that we, as a society, and therefore as individuals, until we come to see through the confidence trick, we as a society are basing the whole superstructure of our behavior and feelings, beliefs, and so on, basing it on foundations which are almost non-existent, unexamined assumptions of a profound nature. So simple are those, so simple and so profound and so unexamined are those foundations, that it seems to be no wonder if our lives are a mess. Why? Because they are built on sound foundations. And we are very, very good at the superstructure, but the superstructure we observe is extremely shaky and in places tumbling down. And why is it tumbling down and why is it shaky? Because of lack of sound foundations. And in science, you establish what is foundation stuff. You establish facts but not by looking it up in books, not by thinking it up in your study, but going out into the world and testing it out with apparatus, with an open mind, testing, doubting everything you can doubt, measuring, and then publishing your results for everyone who can do so to verify. And that is the whole method of science. And it is enormously and fantastically successful in its own field. But its own field is very limited. It's very limited. You could put it like this, and the instruments, among the more potent instruments of regular science is a telescope and microscope. And what is revealed at the far end of your microscope or your telescope has been a world transformed. I mean, the whole the universe of galaxies and stars and the amazing universe, macro universe, if there's such a word. And then again, with the microscope, the amazing microcosmos of atoms, molecules, atoms, particles, quarks, and so on. So at both ends, we've got these marvels revealed. And we feel that on the whole, in the modern world, we are being realistic, thanks to science. Well, I challenge that. And I suggest that, in fact, I don't have to suggest it, it's quite obvious, that telescopes and microscopes and other instruments have two ends. You know, there's an end you're looking at, looking out of. There's an end. The object lens at the end there is the one you're looking out of. But what about the near end? What about what's at the near end of your telescope or microscope? This is a one-directional instrument, a telescope and a microscope. It's one-directional. It's concerned with what's out there. But who's looking at this end? You see, we've only got half the story if we're looking out of one end of our instrument. We are terribly, terribly good at looking at things. We are miserable failures at looking out of something. And you are at the near end of your situation. You're at the near end of every instrument you use. And we have an instrument which we're going to use. We've got an instrument here, which is not as expensive as a microscope or a telescope, but we call it a mesoscope. Which is a very fine instrument. It costs about less than a cent, but a very effective instrument, I think. But it's a two-way instrument, and it's looking at what you're looking out of as well as what you're looking at, and thereby we hope telling more like the whole story. And what's the good of looking at things all the time in ignorance of what we're looking out of? It seems to me to be putting the cart before the horse to do that, and a nonsense. And what we're looking out of is what this afternoon is about. We have a little family group here investigating the truth of what we're looking out of. What it's like right where you are at the centre of your universe. What only you can perceive, and what only you are in a position to report on, which is what it's like right where you are. What it's like right there. Why should we bother about looking to see who's seeing, about what we're looking out of, about what's sitting in our chair at this moment, what's sitting on the seat of our pants? Why should we bother about that? And I think there are several reasons why we should bother about that. You have your own reasons, and I tell you some of mine. One is that the great traditions of the world, the great religious traditions and some philosophical traditions, have said that the answer to the serious problems of my life is nearer than near. The solution to my problems is nearer to me than the problems. And the medicine is nearer than the patient. They've said that. They've said that nearer to me than anything else, what I'm looking out of, what I am at center, what's nearer than near, what's right here at this moment, clearly on show, is my medicine, you know. It's the door opening onto the beautiful garden. It's the pearl of great price. It's the clock of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's the medicine of immortality, and so on. And it's the origin of the world and not a product of the world, they say. And they have different ways of saying this, and they have different names for this treasure, which is alleged to lurk here at the very center of my universe. And it's what I'm looking out of at this moment, they tell me. And that's what we're going to check up on this afternoon, whether they were having us on, whether they were kidding us, playing a confidence trick, or whether it's true that this resource is available, simple, obvious, and so on. That's one reason. And another reason is, Surely, it's interesting. If anything in the world is interesting intrinsically it is who one is. Catherine here, my dear Catherine, puts it very neatly by saying, if you're living with someone, it's just as well to know who you're living with, isn't it? Just as well to know. You're going to have a few basic pieces of information about the person you're living with. It makes sense. But to live with a stranger that you've never investigated, who remains a perfect stranger because you've never bothered to look. Or what you've done is to go around the world saying, who is it living with me? And never going home and having a look. And you go and you go to the bookshop and you buy you buy sheaves and hundreds of books from the walls of this bookshop and other bookshops, and you consult gurus, and you rush around the world asking everybody, who is that person living in my house? But what about having a look? I mean, because they're too far away. They've never been in your house, you see. The authors of those books and all those gurus and teachers, they've never been where you are. So they're not in a position, really not, literally not in a position to tell you what it's like where you are. So we have to have the guts to be our own authority and start again and doubt everything we've been told and have a fresh look. And I think when we have a fresh look, we find. Anyway, I find, I hope you will find, I think you may find, that when we really investigate this question of what it's like, right where we are, what we're looking out of, where we're coming from, what's nearer than near, we find that they were having us on. And we were victims of superstition and unexamined assumption. Multiple unexamined assumptions and damaging ones, tragic ones, lethal ones at that. Now, don't believe a thing I say. We'll test it. And I mean, this intimidation is what the trouble is all about. And let's not be intimidated by old Douglas. Catherine or anyone else. Let's have the courage to be ourselves. And this rings a bell in our hearts that we have courage to be ourselves. Now, I don't mean our psychological selves, because being your psychological self, you tell me how you do that. You may be able to address that problem, but I can't because it's too damn complicated. I mean, psychology, I compare it to a rainforest, impenetrable rainforest, with sundry ways, you get lost in and everything. It's so inconclusive. And every psychologist of any merit, differs very radically from the other ones. And so I'm not talking about psychology. I'm not talking about philosophy or metaphysics, which again is a pretty complex country, which I've ventured in a little, and I've not found that has either healed my heart's anguish or brought me itself to definite conclusions. Just weighing one thing against another in an open-minded fashion. With indecision written all over it. Nor is it a matter of feeling, because this question of our true identity, who we really are, is stable, isn't it? I mean, we're looking for what is stable, what lasts the whole drink through, which is what is there all the time. Now, our feelings, gosh, they are up and down like that, aren't they? And it cannot be relied upon. What we feel today, we don't feel tomorrow. We can't have them to order. We are taken by the nose, by our feelings. Feelings command us rather than ourselves commanding those feelings. At least to begin with, that's the case. But what we can do, what is in our power to do, and what we are going to do presently, these little experiments, is to be our own authority and see who and what we are independent of how we feel. You might feel miserable, you might at this time feel very nice, very nasty, we might have a tummy ache, we might have all sorts of things wrong with us. That's not the kind of stuff to build one's life upon, is it? It's like a rough sea or quicksand. And build your life on feelings is no good. Build it on changing opinions, on what you're thinking again. I'd say, I can't build my life on that stuff because it's changing all the time. And what is plain to me today will be obscure tomorrow and vice versa. What do we build on then? Well, I say we build, at least I build, and I recommend we shall build, our life on what is directly perceptible, what we can actually see in all simplicity, in all honest, childlike simplicity, what we can see to be the case. And this is powerful. This is so powerful. Was it 400 years ago, medieval world, on the whole, the medieval world 400 years ago wanted to know the truth about things. What did it do? It looked up the truth in the Bible, or in Aristotle, or sat in a room and figured out what was reasonable. And then a few people who are kind of, in a way, idiotic people, almost village idiots, intelligent village idiots, they said, damn this intellectuality. And I mean, because these people were brilliant in interpreting the scriptures, interpreting Aristotle. They were absolutely brilliant. They were brilliantly clever at figuring out things. They built a universe which is very beautiful. And it just was not true and didn't work. It was based largely on superstition. And then Galileo came along and his friends in Europe, and it, just one word transformed the world, and it was look. We're not going to believe it, we're going to look and see what happens. And you know the story of the... everybody said, and the Bible didn't say, but they thought the Bible said, anyway, Aristotle, I imagine, said, that, and it was quite obvious anyway, that a great big stone dropped from a height, fell faster than a tiny stone. You know, that one went down, this one crept down. And everybody said, well, it's obvious. And Galileo said, well, I'm going to have a look. And he had a look, and of course he found they were wrong, and the big stone and the little stone fell exactly together. Well, and what was the result of that? The result of that was a modern world. The result of that attitude was the modern world. One word, look, was enough to transform society, give us all the, you know, stuff here, and this microphone, and all sorts of mixed blessings. Mixed, but blessings on the whole, perhaps, but very mixed. One word, look, was enough to do it. Well, I say we are in a mess again. I say superstition is here still. And what is the cure of the superstition? It's the same cure. One word, look. Don't look it up, but look at it. Don't look the darn thing up. We still look things up, don't we, in books. I shouldn't be talking like this in a bookstore. I apologize for that. Well, I've done my share of reading, and I just say when you experience, as you will here, with the truth of who you really are, you can safely read these books, because you can then judge them by your experience and not your experience by those darn books. Yes. Well, anyway, one word, look, 400 years ago was enough to transform our society. Well, our society is in trouble, and we individually reflect those troubles, because I think we all have some, you know, we have our share of problems, don't we? We have our share of problems. And they are deeply related to the problems of our society. And the problem is, I think, as before, we were clever. We were clever dicks, if there's such an American word. We were clever dicks. At level of superstructure, and we were miserably idiotic, superstitious, incredibly stupid at the level of foundations. We've been building on insecure foundations, and the same word look is going to see what those foundations are and should be and could be for rearing a reliable, stable, sensible superstructure upon, both socially and individually. So it's the remedy for superstition is to say, I'm not going to believe it one way or the other, I'm going to have a look. And I would have a look with an open mind and see what is going on. Not think it, not feel it, not look it up, but look and see. And I say 400 years after Galileo, we have an opportunity to repeat at a different level, in a different way, his genius, his inspiration, his flair, with results which I think are even more profound, could be even more profound for the salvation of our race and the well-being of ourselves as individuals than... the revolution which Galileo and company instituted. Well, here we've got some reasons for having a look at the place we never left, what we're coming from, what we're looking out of. And that is, this is foundation stuff. Because the world as disclosed to us is disclosed to individuals. It's not disclosed to a committee or a university or a group of people. It's disclosed. The world comes served up individually. It's not called mass production. It's the meals are served up individually. Personal portions, you might call them. Right? Individual portions of the cheese or whatever like that. Our world is served up to us as individuals, as first person. What is it like being first person? In other words, what we're looking out of, what's it like right here? That is foundation stuff. I suppose another motive before we start this, we're looking to see what it's like here. First motive, let me remind you, is it's been advertised down the centuries that here the treasure lies, here's the pearl of great price, here's the medicine, here's the cure, here's your medicine, here's your cure, here's your resource, here's your inspiration. And the second one is this spiel I've been giving you about foundations and superstition. The third one is, well, just simply the personal one, which you might, I think, endorse personally also, that you jolly well happened, you've occurred, and you needn't have done that, and you're not going to let the opportunity pass of having a look at what's occurred. It seemed to me so puerile, chicken-hearted, nonsensical, just to let the opportunity pass and live and die without ever having a look at who is doing that. It seems stupid, ridiculous. Taking everybody's word for what you're like here, and they're too far away. Nobody's been where you are but you. And the you is the essential ingredient of the whole thing. Without it, there's nothing. You are the answer to all these problems, who you really, 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 really are. And it's a part of our, surely, of our dignity, a part of our instinct, isn't it, to have a look at who's living before you die and find out whether you, in fact, are going to die and disappear, you know, like a flower or a blade of grass. It's worth looking into, isn't it? It's worth looking into. Deeply unpopular, but worth looking into. We have a great fear of this, a profound fear of this, and we'll go into the reasons for that later, perhaps. But let me just now illustrate some things which I found to be the opposite of what I've been told. I had been told by people out there, by books, by gurus and so on, I've been told what I'm like here as first person. I've been told all that stuff, and I fell for it. I fell for it. And I just run through these things that I was told. And I guess you've been told. And you haven't been told out these things in so many words. Because the real messages that society unloads on us are never things which have been spelled out. They're always implicit. They're always implied, never spelled out. The deep convictions, our deep convictions are the ones that never spelled out. They are just taken for granted. Never looked into because they're taken for granted. Nobody bothers to spell them out because they're obvious. Those are the foundation things. And these we built on quicksand, on superstition, on what we've been told. I'll just mention a few things, and we're going to test these things. So don't believe me, we're going to test them in a minute. But I was told just a very, very simple thing. A very simple thing. Well, I assumed, it was quite obvious, that I must be looking and see all these people around looking at two eyes. I'm looking out of two eyes at the world. Two eyes. Everybody assumes that. I'm looking out of two tiny weeny peepholes in a meatball. Two teeny weeny peepholes in a meatball. So, gosh, that's the superstition I fell for at once, without noticing. Without noticing, without questioning. Then I was told, above all, a really important one, that when I met you, wherever you happened to be, we were face to face, and the story was confrontation, like that. And with Catherine, you can see what it's like. Here's Catherine, here's Douglas, and Douglas and Catherine, for you, are confronting one another like that. And it's symmetrical with this microphone stand here. Why? As the axis of the symmetry. A meatball here, a fresher meatball there, and there we are, confrontation. So that's it. Superstition. Not true, as we're going to find out. Anyway, another one. I was told I was small. Well, told I was what I looked like. That I was like, that I was here, what I looked like at a yard away. Now, that's very extraordinary. How could I be here, what I look like there? Because when you go up to anything, I don't care what it is, it changes. Not only changes, it becomes the opposite. Well, look, here is a bottle. It said Arrowhead on. Mountain spring water. Arrowhead, well, that's what it's like at a yard away. Well, what's it like here? There's like nothing here. It's gone. Well, if an arrowhead here is not a head here, what about Douglas's head? There, in the mirror, Douglas's head there is not a head here. Any more than the arrowhead. I didn't fix it so we should make this head here. But it fell out that way, see? By the grace of God. Arrowhead. Arrowhead there is a no-head here, isn't it? No arrowhead here. Yes? Well, I mean, Catherine, look. You got it?
Yes.
Arrowhead there.
Yes.
Now, try it out. What's it like there?
Nothing.
All right. Now, get one of those cards out, please. Now, Catherine, you've got a Catherine head here. Not an arrow head, but a Catherine head this time.
Yes.
You see what it's like there?
Yes.
Have you got it?
Yes.
Got it?
Yes.
Well, I'll bring it up to you and see what it's like where you are.
Nothing.
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 So then, Catherine, for them, we're face to face. Confrontation. Comes up,
yes.
But what is it really like?
It's nothing like that. It's face to face. Because here there's nothing.
Do you mean to say you never were face to face with anyone in your whole darn life?
Never.
She's an honest woman, you know. French, of course, but still honest. Especially honest, because French are very brilliant people. Well, come on. Arrowhead there is no head here. Catherine's head here is no head where she is. Therefore, you never confronted anyone your whole darn life.
Never.
But language says we're face to face.
Well, language is wrong.
Language is wrong. We've been taken for a ride. A superstition.
Mm-hmm.
It's profound superstition. But, you know, if you've got a superstition that the earth is flat and you fall off the edge, all sky is full of angels, all is hell down there, you know, it doesn't matter much because you're out there. It's not very important. But when it comes to being conned about this, that's important, isn't it?
Very important.
Because our whole life is built on this foundation.
The whole world.
The whole world is. Well, I see a few more things about this. You know, it applies to everything that's basic. All I'm dropping things, yes. Thank you, Norma. It applies to everything that's really basic. We lie and lie and lie and lie to ourselves about fundamental things, and then take a periphery and wonder why we're in deep, deep trouble all over the show. It's why? Because we never looked at what was central and what was obvious and simple. And we never dared to be simple. You know? Our motto, our holy motto was, why be simple if we have an opportunity to be complicated? That was our motto. We could have had, you know, our badge would be this. So what happens when you get in your car to go away from here and you look and see what happens? Superstition says, the unspoken law by which we live, the superstition by which we live, says you drive, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour through Los Angeles County. And the buildings are stable and nothing moves. Well, the cars are moving, but they're the city. The buildings, the trees, all that stuff, the houses, stay put. And they don't move, and you're moving through the city. And, of course, it's hallucination, it's superstition again. Because if you dare to look, you'll see that Los Angeles is dancing, that the buildings are turning around and telegraph posts are going by, and the pavement of the road is flowing through like an asphalt river. And this is true, and if you don't believe it, your video will reveal it. Well, it's a matter of life and death to get this right. Because if I have here, what I look like in the mirror, if I have that here, I've had it. I mean, this is 84-year-old specimen here. Douglas head, not an arrowhead, Douglas head. And if I'm, gosh, what is the shelf life of that one? Come on. I mean, if I'm like that here, I've had it. Well, it's a serious matter, see, isn't it? Very serious matter. Well, you know, if you can think of a worse, more damaging superstition to say that I am here, what I look like over there, you tell me it now. Can you think of a more stupid superstition than that? A more damaging superstition? A more superstitious superstition than I am here, what I look like over there? It just doesn't make sense. Does it, Catherine?
Not at all.
It doesn't make sense. And then, Catherine, we wonder why we have problems. We lie and lie and lie about what's fundamental, simple, obvious, common old garden stuff, just childlike stuff. We lie and lie and lie about the directly perceivable data on which our whole life is based. We lie and lie and destroy the foundation. We build on sand and quicksand and wonder why our lives are tumbling about. Talk about St. Andreas. I mean, this is much worse than anything he devised. Extraordinary. Well, let's do some experiments, shall we? Let's do some experiments. And I think we'll try this one, shall we? Try this one. And it never occurred to me before, really, how you think of a superstition. Just think of a superstition, any superstition, from which men and society have suffered. Can you think of a more damaging, more absurd superstition than this one? I am here at 0 inches from myself, what I look like at 30 inches from myself. But we do, don't we? We look in the mirror, see what we're like. Well, I look in the mirror and see what I'm not like here, thank God. Thank God I'm not like that. That's what other people are getting. Thank God I'm not like that here. So, we have here an instrument. We have here an instrument for coming to our senses, an instrument for the destruction of superstition and its replacement by truth, simple truth. And I think we shall find the simple truth is just so blessed, it's blessed beyond belief. Simple truth is just overflowing with blessing. And this, the worst thing about the superstition and hallucination is that it eventually becomes hell. Hell. And it's the truth which sets us free from that hell. Not adjusting our feelings, not thinking it out, not looking it up, but the simple coming to our senses, telling it like it is, looking at what's given, and being our own authority, and not believing a thing Douglas says, or Catherine, or anyone else, about what you're looking out of, because you are the sole and final authority on that. So will you please now address the card, and while we are doing it, addressing the card, let's dare to be our own authority, and keep looking at the card, or what is on display there, and not at Douglas or Catherine. And first of all, get that little guy in your sights. And we're looking at this one with an innocent eye, I hope, prepared for some surprises. And we haven't looked at this one, perhaps, with this degree of honesty for quite some time. Well, there she or he is, the one with whom we have identified so completely that injury to that thing is just so awful, so awful. Even a pimple is awful. Come on. You know, a nasty old wen or pimple or something is pretty worrying, you know. But my God, injury to this one. Keep looking at it, please. Injury, when it's all mushed up, is the most tragic and awful thing, because we've identified ourselves with this. In order to join the human club, we have effectively said, that's me. And you say, well, Douglas, it really is a reflection of you. It's not that the thing in the mirror is not real. It's a reflection of what is here, and it really here. And that Douglas head is here, like that arrow head might be here, you see, that bottle that we tried on and found we couldn't try it on. Well, let's try this on, like I tried that arrowhead bottle on. Let's try the Douglas head, Catherine head, Virginia head, or whatever, Norma head on here. And we do this with great attention to see if we can bring it here, because this is where it's alleged to hang out, or rather hang in. So we bring, I think, take off our glasses, probably, it would be a good thing, and we bring it forward. And could we notice what's happening as we bring it forward and try to put it on? I think we notice that the eyes are getting bigger and the nose is getting bigger, and we've lost the forehead, we've lost the chin. And let's stop about there, about 4 inches away. Now, look, if it would fit on your shoulders now, that would be a pretty tragic thing, wouldn't it? It'd be a very bizarre thing, because it would be screwed on the wrong way. And it would be looking, you'd be looking at your rear all the time. Now think of what a fairground monster you would be. So can we put it on, though? Well, perhaps turn your head a little one side and bring it slowly further on with great attention. And I think you'll find that why the nose and the eye, which you just left, are getting hazier and hazier. And as it comes right here, it's all gone. Just as that arrowhead bottle all went, so that head went, and you can't put it on. So put it back where it belongs. Over there. But you know, a head without shoulders. Keep looking at it. A head without shoulders is a nonsense, really. Loose head won't fit on these shoulders of mine. I can't put it here. Thank God. Thank God. Where does it belong, if not on these shoulders? On whose shoulders does that thing you're looking at now, on whose shoulders does this thing live and belong and hang out this time? To whose shoulders does this attach itself? Try the person on your left.